Namaste. So, we had a long break with regard to the collected works of the mother because of various reasons. Though we have titled it as collected works of the mother, sometimes I feel a more appropriate title is In the Mother's Company, because in Mother's Volume 2 there is a very beautiful speech of her which has also been written down. It is on the demise of one of the masters, and she was asked to speak, and she says that this idea that somebody is there and somebody is gone, this is not quite true. And then she says something very interesting: to think of someone, to remember someone, is to be with the person. So here we are not only thinking of her, we are not only remembering her, but we are reading her. So the purpose of this, these works is primarily to become close to the mother, to open to her. The secondary purpose is also to gain pearls of wisdom. And there are very many pearls of wisdom, which it's a prashad of her tapasya. There are many things in mother's writings, and of course Sri Aurobindo's writings, but more so mother's writings, where it is amazing, at least to me personally. You may scan all the books in the world on different subjects, but you won't get that depth, that insight, that profundity, as well as the practical advice, all of them together in her words, and on every area, every subject that one can imagine. So today we'll take up volume 7, Question and Answers, 1955. As we know that if we go back, this is the time when 14 months one is short of the supramental manifestation, which took place on 29th February 1956. And in 1954 December, in the last conversation, she speaks about the next 14 months which are going to be difficult. And so we will start with this question, which may be in a way also relevant to all that is going on in India and the world. India is only a prototype of, it's like the laboratory, and whatever happens here in some way gets translated in the world ethos, world consciousness. So she has been asked a question about the adverse forces. It's on page 2. Question is, Mother, last time you said that the hostile forces are going to strike a last blow this year. This is what we were mentioning about in December 1954. If the earth is not capable of winning the victory, this is the question, and the mother asked the earth. Did I say the earth? So the disciple asked, the earth, India and individuals. Now this is 55, so we have to understand that post 56 the victory was won in principle, but look at the precarious situation through which the world passed. Yes, it is possible, it is a way of speaking. And so if we are not able to win the victory, mother asks the question, the disciple says, does this mean that the possibility of transformation will be delayed? Why this is important is because we must understand one thing. Lot of miniature battles take place, ups and downs take place. But a battle that has been won in principle, look at what the world was before 1950. So all these forces that we see at display today, they were all in their most blatant form during that period. For example, just to take one example, today if you look at it from the Indian perspective, there is no doubt that there is a side which is about integrating India, and there is a side which stands for breaking India. What happened in 47? Literally, the breaking India forces won. and this is 47. Then 56 onwards, if we see steadily, the integrating India forces are on the rise. Even, you see, 2019, portions of India have been integrated. 71, a portion of India once again got integrated. So this is now a foregone conclusion that the divine's victory is on the way. But then what may happen or what may have happened? That is the question in 1955 that the disciple asks. So the mother says, delayed perhaps by several centuries. See, every time the avatar comes, there are the forces which oppose, they resist, they don't want the divine samrajya to be established. And it's only natural because they are holding the fiefdom. Same thing you will see. They are holding this earth for a very long time. They are not going to give up. If you believe that, they are just going to say, okay, thank you so much. You have come now, we also will change. It doesn't change like that. It takes a long time. Many ups and downs, many blows, many kinds of, sometimes even blood, people have to pay their price with that. So, she says, yes, by several centuries. So, every time the avatar comes, there is a victory which is won, which is a partial victory. But then there is a return. Again, the forces rise to an ascendance. And there is Dharma Siglani, and then once again the avatar comes. He clears the path for the next level. This time the mother and Sri Aurobindo have said it is going to be a decisive victory. That is the difference. Partial victories have always been there. And every time the avatar comes, the resistance he has to face. This is precisely what the adverse forces are trying to bring about. And so far they have always succeeded in putting off the thing. They cannot, eventually, one thing we must never, never forget, because people become cynics, they become depressed. The truth is satyameva jayate, nanritam. But that doesn't mean that it just goes marching freely. Lot of resistance comes on the path. Perhaps this will be for another time, and the other time, perhaps after hundreds or thousands of years. And this is what they want to try to do once again. And then she says, perhaps all this is decreed somewhere. But it is also possible after that, though it is decided, in order that the thing may take place as it ought to, it is not good to reveal what is decided. Sometimes it's not good to speak about it. Sometimes it's a very dangerous thing to speak about even a certain victory. Because if you speak, all the forces attack it. That's why the mother says, don't boast. Why? Because you are literally inviting them. What is called as Abel Mujhe Mar. So, this is a whole occult world, and when people don't know, they commit these mistakes. They learn by mistakes. Of course, there's a constant process. When you say that my victory is certain, you have opened a big gate for the forces. Sri Aurobindo and the mother never said that. Look at 1955-54. She knew Supermind is going to descend 14 months later. But she doesn't say a word. All that she says is the next 14 months are going to be difficult. Why is she saying that? Sri Aurobindo, every time people would ask him, why don't you tell us a date? Why do you always speak about probability? Why don't you tell us a date? He says, the moment I will tell a date, all the occult forces in the world will try to finish it, delay it. They will do everything within their means to so that it doesn't happen. One should never reveal a secret. Either we may use the word strategy or a secret plan. See, Sri Krishna revealed this secret plan to whom? One, to Duryodhana, of course, to avoid the war. And second was to Arjun. But even then it has to go through all kinds of bloodshed. He didn't stand up in the middle of the battlefield and tell everybody, look Bhishma, look Drona, see what I am going to tell you. I am going to show you what is going to happen. This is very dangerous. So this is one thing which we must remember. all our life in yoga. This is so important. The moment you say, I have gone through it, I'm sure everybody has experienced who has gone through the process, that sometimes you don't even say, you feel, ah, I have conquered this. Wait for few days. So that's why one should have tremendous humility, because otherwise it opens the door to attack by adverse forces. They take advantage of it. So she says, people, there are many things like that, because people are neither conscious enough nor pure enough to do what they should do, exactly as they should do it, with full knowledge of the result. For the result, 99 times out of 100 is not what they desire. Or if it is what they desire, it is modified, it is mixed. So second thing we must understand, even if the divine has decided this is how it will be, this is what should happen, the larger result, we still don't understand what the divine really wants. Long back, I remember when we were going in for 125th year celebration of Sri Aurobindo's births, and 125th year, now it's 150th. So there was a meeting, I was also present in that meeting, and one very well-known writer, Padma Awardee, Sahitya Academy, but devotee, he said in the meeting, after all deliberation about how to celebrate, we must build India of our dreams. And I said, sir, please, please, it is not India of our dreams, it is India of Sri Aurobindo's dreams. This is the second error. We feel, whatever I dream, God is sanctioning it. There is a very famous saying about it. You should not say that God is on my side. You should say, I am on the side of God. This subtle difference. So we should grow conscious as to what really Sri Aurobindo wants for this nation, for this civilization, for the world at large, and not simply. So this is called growing conscious. So this is the second aspect. Parallelly, I am also talking about the subtle aspects, the occult aspect, the spiritual aspect of the Indian election scenario also, because people have asked for it. So things get mixed, diluted, and there are differences enough not to be fully satisfactory. Our desires come in, our wishes come in, our ambitions come in, and they deflect the thing. So a victory which was certain gets modified because of all these things. That's why the one instrument that Sri Krishna chooses, he chooses Arjun. He wants just one instrument, but one instrument which has no personal idea, is completely whatever the divine will dictates. Why he doesn't choose Bhim? Because Bhim has decided, I am going to finish 100 Kauravas. He said, okay, granted for you. But you can't be the perfect instrument out of the two. Why not Yudhishthir for the Gita and the perfect instrument? Because Yudhishthir has his preconceived ideas. Okay, let's be together. After all, they are causing his own ideas about right, wrong, good, bad. Arjun, of all of them, if you see carefully, he is the one person. Dhritarashtra has his own agenda. Drishtadyumna has his own agenda. Drupad has his own agenda. Virat has his own agenda. All of them. Satyaki has his own agenda. But Satyaki is a great warrior of all, after Arjun, if one can, Bhim and Arjun. But Arjun is somebody who says, I just don't understand. I'm a good guy, but what do you want me to do? Tell me. I want to do good, but what do you want? So it's so important. And it's important not just about now, because many things are going to come. We should not worry about, you know. But so important that one instrument, whoever is picked up, should not make a mistake which Napoleon made at one point of time. And Sri Aurobindo speaks about it. Napoleon, when he was rising on the crest of victory, you know, he made a mistake. And that's what I was feeling some days back. Napoleon started saying, Napoleon is France. And France is Napoleon. And Sri Aurobindo says, Kali slayed him. cast him aside. So that humility is always required, that however great one may be, it's the greatness of the divine. To always be that it's not me, nothing to do with me, it's the divine. So these are some of those deepest secrets. I'm not analyzing the surface events. That's really irrelevant at one point. But that one instrument repeatedly has to remember that there is nothing of me. It is only the divine. It's only the divine. And he has to not only remember but remind everybody. So if one knew ahead exactly what was going to happen, one would remain seated quietly and would do nothing any longer. One would say, good, if this must happen, it is good. I have nothing more to do. So predictions, prophecies have this great disadvantage. You predict, you prophesy. So people believe your prophecy. They don't realize that even a sure thing can be delayed by human stupidity. Human beings are required to fulfill a prophecy. And depending on their actions, things may get delayed. And I'm talking of not prophecy done by either, Rashifal and astrologers. Even you have surely seen that an event is going to take place. Normally this event is seen by the greatest of the great beyond time and space. It is decreed. So it is something which has not manifested. Now, when it manifests in the play of time and space, all these forces, they know it is decreed. So we can say very safely, the rise of India and Sanatan Dharma is decreed. That is said by Sri Aurobindo. It has nothing to do with, but we need to now tune ourselves what really it means, what really is Sanatan Dharma. This is one part which we need to understand. Because we all have our own idea of Sanatan Dharma. Is Sanatana Dharma only the past ways of life, or Sanatana Dharma has to do with the future? All this is in the realm of and the time taken. But he who can act in all circumstances in full knowledge of the cause, knowing what the result of his action will be, and at the same time can do a certain thing which is sometimes even in contradiction with this result, that person indeed can know. So you are acting, even if you know that you have to act, she says something very interesting, even in contradiction to the result. And if you remember, he knows sure victory of the opposite side and yet he acts. The one example that comes to our mind is Bhishma. When Bhishma is asked, he says, I know for sure that Kauravas will lose. I know for sure that Pandavas are going to win. And he says, simply because Dharma is on that side, Krishna is on that side. I have my role to play, I am playing it. So, to what extent a Karma Yogin can rise that he is even playing a role? Because there is a role everyone has to play. In fact, if you see the first 10 days, people have different ways of interpreting Bhishma's action. He massacred the army very badly. First 10 days, if you read the war, it is like, what's happening? From 11th day onwards, everything changes. The next 8 days is a different story. Now, what did he do? He energized and galvanized the Pandavas. Why? Because they are still, what should we do? They are dilly-dallying. And suddenly you see that 10th day, it is a very fierce battle. And the last galvanization is when he almost disarms Arjun. And Shri Krishna has to wake up. He says, you can't touch him, I am protecting him. And then the whole army gets galvanized and Bhishma himself says that how I am going to die. So if you see the Mahabharata war, it's very interesting. First 10 days, nothing. Lots is happening, but though you can say this way, that way. But basically, Pandav's army is being destroyed very badly. And Yudhishthir on the 10th day is very worried. He says that this way, the way Bhishma is attacking, probably we just have, in another few days, he's going to finish us completely. So, the third takeoff point is, sometimes the divine allows this to happen to galvanize us, to energize us, to understand things better and act in the true light. So, there are very few people And therefore she says that such is the greatness of the great. All the great men who have created, realized something, their aim, their ambition, their plan was always much greater, vaster, more complete, more total than what they did. So she says, what should people do? Because they don't know what's going to happen. So when you don't know, what do? You inwardly plan, don't speak about it, but inwardly plan, sky is the limit. So that is to the credit of that, you know, you don't just plan base things. Then you may not reach there, you will reach even when you fall. This was a saving grace. That when you try to reach out to the skies, you may rest on Mount Everest, which is not a bad idea. So this is how she says, they always, more total than what they did, they always fell short of their expectation and hope. So why they are not able to do it? She says, that's why, that's how people say that you cannot, so plan higher, you will fall short, but still you will achieve something. It is a weakness, but it comes from what I said, that unless one has a very great ideal before him and the hope of realizing it, one doesn't put out all the energies of the being and therefore doesn't do what is necessary to attain even to the nearest goal. So, see, some of us talk about it as Dharma Yudhya and Ram Rajya, but in politics it's a party Yudhya. It doesn't work. You have to rise beyond it and live for India. Very few feel like that. And something greater than India, for the sake of the world, for something which is, and you should know it, that this is what we stand for. We don't stand only for a personal battle. And that's what how does Ram galvanize an entire army of monkeys and bear? Somebody, of course, cut a joke on it that it was nice that he had an army of monkeys and not of man, because men may have deceived him. So, but that apart, what does he say? It's not a fight for my victory or winning back Mata Sita. We are fighting for a much greater ideal. This is what, that will give us energy even till the last breath. That the battle is not just about a party. Battle is about something much greater. There are people who will fight for a party, it's okay. But we must remember as mother's children that we are engaged in a much greater battle which is happening on many planes. And as we, by mother's grace, because otherwise it's impossible, win that victory within us, we will facilitate the victory outside us. Because this is the other question people ask, what should we do? For us, it's very clear. We are on a journey which is going to give us the final solution. We should put all our energies onto that. And if and when we win that victory, the mother will win that victory for us. Because even this idea that we have won the victory, Kain Upanishad is a reminder. And then the divine has to come and tell them, it's not your victory. It is the victory of the divine in us. And once he wins the victory in us, it gets translated. And this is at least the road that we as mother's children and devotees and sadhaks must do. So while we meet on the ground of India, Sanatana Dharma, but our approach is different. And as we succeed in this, so we will see that events start taking place outside us. So this a little bit in detail, I just thought I'll touch upon. This is, as I always say, mother has her own ways of answering things from the deepest standpoint. So this volume has plenty of interesting pearls. Now we come to that with this little introductory note, which this is the first conversation which we read. For instance, mother speaks about health and healing, quiestic optimism. So Ku is a doctor who advocated a method that keeps saying, I am fine, I am cured, I am cured. And she talks of an instance that there was a person who was growing bald. So he would say, I am growing hairs, I am growing hair, I am growing hair. And he ended up growing. Of course, nowadays bald is beautiful. Otherwise, for men. But even for women, now this new trend has come, you know. But there was a time when, you know, you needed more hair. And so this is how it was, you know. It is very interesting, by the way, about here, but I don't want to digress into this. Why this shift has taken place from hair being the sign of beauty to bald being the sign of beauty. So anyway, so she speaks about it. But she also cautions when people ask her about when can the body become completely immune. This question is asked to her. It is also in this volume. She says, hasn't Sri Aurobindo told you only with the transformation? So we must also be careful that all these things, hypes and hopes, you take this, you are proof, corona proof, you are this proof, that proof. Body is imperfect right now. It is open to all kinds of forces. Therefore, to expect and imagine by this means or that means. Now, again, those who have belief in that, those who want to follow it, they should do it. Nothing wrong with that. Yam yam vapi smaran. Those who believe in whatever system should do. But we should not make the mistake of thinking that temporary measures are permanent cures. Permanent cure only comes with the transformation of the body, and those who are engaged in it must engage in that. Then there is very interesting conversation where somebody asked Sir that those who have a developed psychic being, what kind of circumstances they have? Because very often we say, oh, look at people, he is such a bhakta, he is such a good human being, but he is surrounded by all kinds of difficulties. And then we are told the psychic being chooses the circumstances. So why would the psychic being choose to be born in a small village in Odisha and not in a, you know, mega city in New York? Now, on the face of it, the answer is obvious. Why would it? Because the psychic being's values are very different. A developed psychic being may want to be again and again born in India because it knows that's where it will get its full scope. But having said that, people still believe that difficult circumstances, such and such a person is such. And we see the life of so many saints and sages. We see that how challenging they had. And the mother answers it very beautifully. She says, I think the more psychic one is, psychic, she means about developed psychic, not psychic in that way. Usually, the more difficulties he has. At one place he even said, look at the life of Pandavas, for that matter of Ram himself, Lord Ram himself. Look at their life, how much challenges and difficulties they've gone through. Only one is armed to face the difficulties. Narsingh Mehta's life. But he's armed to face the difficulty. You see, I mean, suddenly he doesn't know what will happen to my daughter. And one of those stories where Shri Krishna comes and literally mang bharai. By the way, I have seen this in the story of a man, a devotee of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And literally his wife abandoned herself. She was a Krishna bhakt but also devotee of Sri Aurobindo, like many. And daughter had some serious problems and there was no hope of her getting married because of the serious problem, psychological problem and all kinds of problems. And one day, is this daughter's mother, she says, I don't know, you are her mama. You have to take care, find a bridegroom. Within 15 days, somebody walked in, married, takes care, one cannot imagine, till date I don't know how. She has two children, till date, as a doctor I have not seen such a case ever in my life. Takes care like anything and is a good human being. I mean, I just don't know what went through. And it's not that she is a very beautiful girl or something, you know, somebody may get attracted, nothing like that. So divine has his ways. So difficulties are there, but one is armed to deal with it. That's what she is saying. But the more psychic one is, the more is he in contradiction with the present state of the world. This is the other problem. That's why places like ashram have been created. One reason is that if you are living in the world, you are in that state where you say, where am I? Why am I? I remember at least for me going to hospital every day and I'm wondering there must be a better way to deal with life. What is this world? And all of us who take to this life at some time, we feel like a total stranger. Or the world feels like a stranger. So one is in contradiction with the world as it exists. So she says, so when one is in opposition with something, the result is difficulty. Nobody understands you. Good, that means you are on the right track. If everybody understands you, you are popular with everybody, that means maybe everything is not all right. See, look at the greater one rises in consciousness. Look at all the people. Even Sri Aurobindo, somebody filed a case against Sri Aurobindo that you have hypnotized my son and he has come and joined the ashram. Legal notice. Just imagine, 17-year-old, I think it was, not Gangadharan, somebody else. So what? That, because you don't understand such a person. Actions of the mother, who would understand? Of course, Sri Krishna. You know, in the battle, how Bhurishrava and many others had the same fate. So everybody opposes, the parents opposes, others oppose, the world does not understand you. And I have noticed that most often those who have many difficulties are those who are in a more or less close contact with their psychic being. Thank God. So one can have a sigh of relief if there are a lot of difficulties in life. At least there is one indirect marker that people go through this state. That why no one understands. Yes, you are not of the same type. A lion in a sheep flock, who will understand? Somebody may say, why not the other example? Because if a sheep goes into a lion flock, it's not likely to exist anymore. But a lion in a sheep flock, he tries to imitate, tries to become, but in the end he feels that he does not belong here. That's how the one good thing about the story of Mowgli. And if you want to speak about outer circumstances, I am not speaking of the characters. She is not saying difficulty me inner nature, one will be a dishonest fellow. She is not speaking of that. That is a different domain that may or may not be there for a different reason, but about the difficulties of outer circumstances. That's quite different. But of outer circumstances, the people who have to struggle most and would have most reason to suffer are those who have a very developed psychic being. And she gives the reason, the world is not developed enough. That's why she says, there are souls which have waited for 1,000, 2,000 years, they want to take birth now. So, because they couldn't have come immediately. And today we see these children. Then she says something, another very interesting revelation. First, the development of the psychic being has a double result, which is concomitant. That is, with the development of the psychic being, the sensitivity of the being grows. So people often don't understand. Arey, what is there? Theek hai, gum bhula do, forget your sorrows, drown them in liquor, become little hard-hearted. No, psychic being by its nature is so sensitive to beauty, to love, to goodness, that wherever it sees even a slight contradiction, it experiences that sense of shrinking, unless it's a heroic soul. So it suffers. And with the growth of sensitivity, there is also the growth of the capacity for suffering. Imagine Buddha suffering for whose sake? Everything is just right for him. And yet Buddha suffers for everybody. Look at Sri Aurobindo. He could have, you know, in every way become the most successful person in the world. He still is, but look at how he had to go through the difficulties and challenges. If you want to speak about the capacity for suffering, but there is the counterpart, that is, to the extent to which one is in relation with the psychic being, one faces the circumstances of life in an altogether different way and with a kind of inner freedom which makes one capable of withdrawing from a circumstance and not feeling the shock in the ordinary way. You can face the difficulty or outer things with calm, peace and a sufficient inner knowledge not to be troubled. This is the difference. Look at Mother Sri Aurobindo. he speaks about it in Savitri. Hard is the world redeemer's heavy task. The world itself becomes his adversary. His enemies are the beings he came to save. Within the ashram, people asking him questions, doubting everything. And with the mother, people having the urge to push her, and she is keeping the person nearby. Why she could do it? You're facing it differently. Somebody else will say, oh, you don't realize I have given you shelter? Go away. But she is, and what a karuna, compassion. So this is where we need to understand ki this, there is a difference. So on one side you are more sensitive, and on the other you have more strength to deal with the sensitivity. So such a beautiful description of psychic being vis-a-vis life. And there are many interesting things I'll just quickly touch upon. The body and food. Nowadays there is so much thing about what food to eat, what not to eat, etc., etc. And she gives us a very simple formula. Let me read it. I love that formula. She says, very simply, I think those who want to are having problems related to food. This is on page 62. Take it out, fix it, and look at it. She says, in fact, the best thing is not to think about it, about food. After a long, lot of truth she reveals. But in the end, she gives us this formula. But to regulate one's life automatically enough not to need to think of eating. She's not in favor of fasting. She says, when you fast, ultimately a lot of vital energy you can draw from the environment, and you can continue to fast. But later on, it can come back. And you may open to all kinds of forces which are not very healthy instead of opening to the higher sources. Very few can do it during fasting. So she says, don't think about it. You eat at fixed hours. Why? Practical advice. Because the body juices get secreted. The body works best with habit and discipline for the body. You eat at fixed hours. Eat reasonably. You must eat reasonably. You don't even need to think of the food when you are taking it. You must eat calmly, that's all. Quietly, with concentration. And when you do not eat, you must never think about it. Very simple. Such a wonderful formula. And she also gives us a magic formula about sleep. How to sleep. See, like a really a mother, you know, because when physical mother doesn't necessarily teach, actually it should be taught. We don't ever teach a child eating and sleeping because we take it for granted. I don't know whether parents teach a child, because food is instinct, sleep you automatically get, so they don't really teach. So the Divine Mother has to become even our physical mother. So she is teaching us. So what is she teaching about sleep? She uses the word conscious sleep. So what one has to do? The body is in a state of complete repose. Not those twitching. So one has to give some time for the body to just relax and become quiet. With the nerves relaxed, which means any stimulants before sleeping is not a good idea. Any animated discussion is not a good idea. Watching any program that is going to be very exciting, heated debate, so that's not a good idea. One is completely relaxed. With the nerves relaxed, the muscles relaxed, one is completely relaxed and at rest. But the spirit remains conscious. So while the body is relaxed, the heart, the awareness, the aspiration, that should be there. Conscious enough to be able to put the vital also at rest. So that time of desires and other things are coming, focus on the inner consciousness, on the inmost. being, the mind also at rest, and let everything be in a state of peace, quietude, immobility, so that the consciousness can be completely free. Then the consciousness can either rest also if it thinks it necessary, or work if it thinks that is needed, and in any case it is free to do as it wants, what it wants, and to go to the regions to which it wants to go. So it means that there is a consciousness which is entangled with the forms. So when all these are quiet, this consciousness is free. It can soar. It can go where it wants to go. How? On the vehicle of aspiration. So such very beautiful, simple things. And there are so many programs on sleep, workshops on sleep. But she is giving us free of cost. If this knowledge, she said, you come to Pondicherry and you deposit $100, then I will tell you, I'll make you do it, then people would go back probably with this idea that I have received something. But I, at least as a psychiatrist, I haven't heard anything more complete and more simple. Then there is another very interesting thing. This is a question that we all ask. Several interesting things. But so what about the psychic being and its destiny in the future? So she reveals many things. When the psychic being is fully developed, it's on page 87. When it no longer needs to return to earth for its development, when it is absolutely free, it has the choice between no longer coming back to earth if it finds that its work lies elsewhere, or if it prefers to remain in the purely psychic consciousness without reincarnating, or else it can come when it wants, as it wants, where it wants, perfectly consciously. Developed psychic being is a free being. You can't apply any of the rules on that. It may come, it may not come, it may dwell with the gods on the higher planes, with the deity, it can merge, it can even come for the work, it can incarnate one of the beings of the overmind. So that's what she reveals. And there are those who have united with forces of a universal order and with entities of the overmind or elsewhere, who remain all the time in the earth atmosphere and take on bodies successively for the work. So this is what we see. We understand how Sri Ramakrishna explains Swami Vivekananda's coming. And he says, oh, you have come. And then he describes it in one of his experiences. That, you know, Swami Vivekananda is sitting in one of the higher planes and meditating like Angiras Rishi. Or probably Angiras Rishi. So Angiras is a, again, they are typal forces, which involutionary forces which have gone to that plane. And they continue to guide the earth. And they provide the thirst for aspiration. And they have plenty of functions. There is a whole discussion in the Vedas on that. And then he says that there is a child who goes and pulls him. Come, come, come down to earth. Come down to earth. And he opens the eyes and comes down. So Angiras Rishi is Swami Vivekananda. And the child is Sri Ramakrishna. And at the same time, there is the element of Shiva. Shubhendu says, gaze of Shiva. Something of Shiva was there in him. That's why, you know, he had that renunciation of what an order. Suddenly he says that I want to serve the poor, the lowly, the destitute. All ways of Shiva. And at the same time, he would not follow any norm. You could not bind him into any format. So, and of course, if he would get angry, that aspect of Shiva, any injustice, anything, and if he got angry, then God save the person. So, of course, he was a free person who incarnated some of these forces. So, there are beings who incarnate forces of the overmind, some of the gods, and with them one cannot say things should be like this and things should be like that. They come and leave at their own will. When they believe their work is done, they don't care that how old am I, how will it look, what will people think. They have done what they have to do, and they just depart quietly. Sri Aurobindo speaks of it in one of his poems. They silently depart. In Savitri there is a description that the superhuman rider, and they do their work and depart silently into the silence from which they had come. So these are very interesting. Then she says something very interesting about the ashram. So what are we expected to do, and what is done here, what becomes easier here? People often talk about 101 things. They talk about this problem, this good, that good, this dai is good, this dai is bad, this is good, this is bad. Hey, Baba, this is going to be there in everywhere, because all kinds of people. Chotnarayan ji had a very simple way of telling it. Shivji ki barat hai. He had one line description of the ashram. Shivji ki barat. Shiva's wedding party. So who is there? You have the gods. You also have the bhut pishaj. You also have, asur. Everybody, because everybody comes with hope. But what is happening, and what? She says something very interesting. The sign of psychic development and how it is facilitated here. She says, this faith, this trust in the divine grace is in the psychic. If you are having this faith and trust, trust is, faith is the divine exists. Trust is the divine will take care of everything. Confidence is when the divine takes care of everything, then there is nothing to worry about. So all this belief, of course, is a mentalized thing. So say this trust, this faith is a sign of the psychic development. Behind, there, like that, in the psychic, always there. So if one is feeling this always, that means one is fully in contact with the psychic being. So sometimes it is the feeling, sometimes it is the thought, sometimes even it is the body which is in contact with the psychic, in which case it feels, doesn't matter, you may have an illness, I'll be fine. The body has that faith in the divine grace, and it's not worried, full of doubt, fears, nothing. So even the body can be in the contact with the psychic. Under the influence of the psychic, even without knowing it, and at that moment, this kind of trust, of faith, comes in front like that and supports. You have an illness, and this faith comes, supports you through the journey, because the body itself becomes receptive. Faith in the grace. It's not a mental thing. It's not like deep within your faith, but oh my God, what has happened to me? It doesn't come, because simply because the psychic is flowing into the body. It flows. It's a substance. So the substance can flow, even fill the body and mind with sweetness. This happens when one has momentary contacts with his psychic. For example, when you find yourself in a very great difficulty or a very great physical danger and suddenly feel this, this force coming into you, the force of a faith and absolute trust in the divine grace which helps you. So these contacts create that. Or in the face of danger, difficulty, almost certain, maybe even death, but this psychic is full of faith. There is a contact and there is suddenly the faith in the divine grace. All will be well, and whatever happens will be well. So this Kalyan Shraddha is a spontaneous, something Sri Aurobindo gives so much importance in the synthesis of yoga. Towards the end of the entire synthesis of yoga, after all the practices and everything, she speaks of faith in the divine Shakti. And he speaks of Kalyana Shraddha. And then she says something very interesting. So it means that there is a conscious contact with one's psychic and it comes to help you. It is a special grace bestowed. Now she is saying something. Sometimes, you know, the divine like a footnote, passingly. And if you miss it, you miss it. So she is saying something interesting. This is the condition which ought to be the most frequent here. Mark the word here. Because it facilitates the psychic emergence spontaneously. Just being here, that's why people come for a few days. Why it's necessity? You come here and you are touched by something which is facilitates the emergence of the psychic. For this contact is established all the time, consciously, deliberately, in everyone. This one sentence, that here it is facilitated, this contact. So this instance ought to be the most frequent, is the most normal here. Again she qualifies here. That is, according to the part which is active or according to the necessity of the moment, it is here or there that suddenly you feel this trust which takes possession of you and guards you. It is like that. I know of a person who had an accident and I had taken him to Jipmer for one of my early days as a doctor, and I was not happy because they keep you in critical care, no, with all those patients, somebody is still on ventilator, and I was feeling very bad that, you know, somebody who had lived his life in the ashram should be here. Quite an old man. So while normally you leave and come, so that time partly that sense, and there were not too many things on the plate. So I said, I'll wait, I'll not leave. I'll be by his side. I don't want to leave him surrounded. I'll invoke the mother's presence and I can't do anything much. It was very evident that he is not likely to survive from the physical point of view. He had a very bad head injury. So in that state, suddenly he starts telling me, oh, it is raining. So I knew something is happening now. It is raining. And he's saying, like flakes of snow. What a grace. What a delight. Such a beautiful experience in front of me. I didn't say you are in hospital. I said, yes, so wonderful. Thank God I was not a materialist. Oh, no. You know you are in hospital. Keep quiet. Nor call the doctor. He's blabbering. Please give some injection. 2 hours he was in that beatific state with a smile. And then he left his body. So you see that state, how when it is facilitated, what can happen. There's a very interesting thing about 2 very quick remarks and then we'll read the last bit. Collective illness in the ashram. Somebody asked, why do people fall ill? She uses the term panergy is sheep. Sheep mentality. Then she gives the example of a sheep from a boat which fell. And all the others followed. She says there is no need for it. So sometimes, oh Corona, oh Corona, oh Corona. Instead of that, we could have said, oh Karuna, Karuna, Karuna. So, and then the problem of women, men and women. She says something very interesting. Somewhere it has gone in the atmosphere, but obviously it is caught by the tail end. And she says this problem can only be solved permanently. She speaks about feminist movement, everything. At the end she says this problem will be solved permanently only when she speaks about the new being who will be neither man nor woman. But she explains it. It's not neuter. It's not Q or that category. She says normally the masculine and feminine, these two lines have been taken because one is the power of conception, the other is power of execution. So man conceives in the ideative world, and also he is required at the most biological level also for a woman to conceive. But from that point onwards, everything is done by the woman. Giving birth to a child, raising the child, developing, looking after the home, everything, if you really look at it. So she says normally nature uses this differentiation so that one can conceive, be in the heights, and then the other can execute. We see in Mother and Shurbindu's relation. But she says the new being, it is very much possible and it will happen that will at once have the vision and the action, will combine vision and action, will at once conceive as well as execute. So basically when these two things are there in the same person, what we normally called as Ardha Narishwar combining, and we have all kinds of fanciful things around it. But it means both these aspects, the passive and the dynamic aspects, when they are combined in one person, then you don't need. And really you look at it, what does he say? Men are slaves. Why are they slaves? For the small comforts of married life. Also for the contact, through physical contact, the pleasure, something that you know you feel you can get from there. When you are there in your own dynamic and passive, both are combined, then it won't be necessary. And she says that's what the new being will be. She speaks of women also, the need of security, the need for having a child, for which she, motherhood, experiencing motherhood. So she says these are three slaveries of men, three of women. It's there in volume 2 and volume 14. But she says that ultimately man, the new being, will be beyond man and woman, not neither man nor woman. So that's why I use the word tail end. Present day woke culture is about neither man nor woman, or my wish. I am man this morning and woman tomorrow. No, you have distorted a very great truth. Beyond man and woman should be the approach, so that both are combined. And this last bit with which we will stop, she speaks about various motives with which people come, take up yoga, and the differences. She says one should not come only because one is wants to escape from the problem of life. Page 198. To do Sri Aurobindo's yoga is to want to transform oneself integrally. It is to have a single aim in life, such that nothing else exists any longer. That alone exists. Yoga is not done by a divided mind. See? And so one feels it clearly in oneself, whether one wants it or not. But if one doesn't, one can still have a life of goodwill. It's not like people cry. She says there are many people who have come here because they want to be part of the whole thing. One can do many things. One can work, one can be of service, of understanding. But between this and doing yoga, there is a great difference. What is the main difference between doing all these things and doing yoga? She says, and to do yoga, you must want it consciously. So, aspiration. No aspiration, okay, one can do many things. One can serve, one can lead a life of goodwill, etc., etc. But yoga is about wanting consciously. This is what I want. You must take a resolution about it. But once you have taken the resolution, you must no longer flinch. That is why you must take it in full knowledge of the thing. One should read, understand. Swami Vivekananda spoke about that. Read, think, meditate. And a time comes when you say, this is what I want to do. Then it is finished. All these are preparatory phases. Nothing, it's not excluding this. This is a preparation, and a time comes when there is this aspiration. And she speaks about what is that aspiration? To give oneself to the divine. You must know what you are deciding upon when you say, I want to do yoga. Don't say later on, I came to do yoga, but an avalanche of troubles have fallen upon me. But people asked her. She says, well, it is to grow in sincerity. Are we really one-pointed? And ultimately, if we see at the end of the day, what matters? Why do we suffer? Because of attachments to various things, personal and others. And if we take it that I have to do yoga, it's not that we have to throw away things or remove them, no. But we must understand that apart from our union with the divine, everything else is there. Its importance is how much it leads us and the world towards that process, and not of value only for their own sake or because my ego takes a preferential interest in them. That should be clear. And then when one takes the decision to do it. And that's why she says, I never press you. She's telling the students, I never tell you that take up yoga. I tell you all this knowledge, you can use it. And then she says, there is a consciousness there acting constantly to rectify the situation, which puts you all the time in the presence of obstacles which prevent you from advancing, make you bump against your own errors and your own blindness. And this acts only for those who have decided to do the yoga. Because then your hidden resistances, your challenges, inner, outer, they all come forward. For others, the consciousness acts like a light. So how you will see that this difference? It acts like a light, a knowledge, a protection, a force of progress, so that they may reach their maximum capacities and be able to develop as far as possible in an atmosphere as favorable as possible, but leaving them completely free in their choice. So this is the difference. There are two types of humanity, or three types. One which has come for various reasons. A mother has given shelter, difficulties, problems, challenges of outer life, for whatever reasons he has accepted. They are also in a state of preparation. Second, who are here, and they can be full of goodwill, they may serve, and consciousness is there to protect, like a light, it is guiding them. But the third is those who accept the yoga and are like disciples. There, all your hidden resistances, obstacles, they come, you have to face them. You can't say why life is like that. It is organized in such a way that you cannot hide, you cannot put covers. Because this is how it is going to be. The decision must come from within. Those who come consciously for the yoga, knowing what yoga is, well, their conditions of living here are, outwardly there is no difference, but inwardly there is a very great difference. There is a kind of absoluteness in the consciousness which does not let them deviate from the path. On one side, they are very clear why they are here. And whatever may happen, even if earthquakes, hell breaks fire, heaven meets with cold, pitiless denials, everything, yet they remain steadfast. They go through whatever difficulty comes, like a tremor on the surface, but they are clear about it, that this is what we want. The errors one commits become immediately visible, with consequences strong enough for one not to be able to make any mistake. So when those who have accepted the yoga or felt the decision inside, and things become very serious. But it is not often like that. So she speaks about then children that, you know, I am not asking you to do yoga. You have to grow up, take a conscious decision. But the day you make a choice, when you have done it in all sincerity and have felt within yourself a radical decision, an irreversible decision, the thing is different. So sometimes people say that, you know, somebody got distracted, went to some other Guruji or path. Some people asked me, once they asked me to convince him. I said, it means he is not meant for this path, he is not ready for this path, he has not chosen it within. No, no, he is such a nice person, he always wears white clothes, I don't know why people have this in mind. Very quietly, he goes to the dining room, works, all that. I said, all this doesn't matter. I had just come here. All this doesn't matter. The fact that he is going is itself a sign, don't do anything, leave it. Let the mother take care. Otherwise, one continues regardless of anything. So you have to make a choice. When you have done it in all sincerity and have felt within yourself a radical decision, the thing is different. There is the light and the path to be followed, quite straight, and you must not deviate from it. It fools no one. You know, yoga is not a joke. You must know what you are doing when you choose it. But when you choose it, you must hold on to it. You have no longer the right to vacillate. You must go straight away. Of course, there are people who deviated, who went away. And that's very dangerous. It's okay when you are here in a goodwill service. You go here, there, come back. But when you take a decision to do yoga, you're on the path. And then Dilip Kumar Roy, Barinda, lamented. later on that we made a mistake. But then Anil Baran. So how many forces come, they break loose into us to do the yoga of transformation, which of all things is the most arduous. It is only if one feels that one has come here for that. Then she clarifies, I mean here upon earth. So that people don't think that they have come to the ashram only. And that one has to do nothing else but that. And that it is the only reason of one's existence. Even if one has to toil hard, suffer, struggle, it is of no importance. This is what I want and nothing else. Then it is different. And whatever one has to go through, I have seen people go through it, you know, how beautifully they take so many challenges, difficulties. Global karma, as Nalinda once remarked, when somebody felt, why does he have a heart attack? Suddenly he reads the thought. This is global karma. Pavitrada, going through such excruciating pain. Why? Later on mother reveals. He was full of compassion, so he would take the difficulties of so many people. Quite naturally he would take it. And she says, I understand why he suffered. But look, what a yogic leap. Every cell of his body, his consciousness, he pumped into the mother and joined. So this is what is required. I had this little difficulty that why this transformation, why should I go in for? Till it became clear, you want to serve the mother? Yes. You cannot serve perfectly if the instrument is imperfect. So, you cannot love perfectly if the instrument is imperfect. You cannot know what she wants if the instrument is imperfect. Then, from that angle, transformation. That's how Champak Lalji says that, you know, when I came here, I found the pressure of transformation. And finally, she says, otherwise, I shall say, those people would be here. They don't want to do yoga. I will say, be happy and be good. And that's all that is asked of you. Be good in the sense of being understanding, knowing that the conditions in which you have lived are exceptional, and try to live a higher, more noble, more true life than the ordinary one. So as to allow a little of this consciousness, this light and its goodness to express itself in the world, it would be very good. But once you have set foot on the path of yoga, you must have a resolution of steel. So Vivekananda spoke of nerves of steel. Of steel, and walk straight on to the goal, whatever the cost. Jema.